And his reaction is favorable on that item that I've been talking about. Although he's inclined to think maybe we ought to have him originate over on his side, he's also somewhat of the opinion that as far as any big tax bill is concerned, that he doesn't want to fool around with it unless and until you make some drastic cuts in your program and on the spending end. And my reaction, of course, on that is, well, why not just go ahead and do this particular thing that we right now, and then I think we could take it to the Senate amendment. My guess is that he could be prevailed upon to confer with us on it. The House votes, I think they would take it if you said you thought it was a good idea.
I haven't made any decision. I don't want to make any. I don't want to foreclose other options and other things. On the other hand, I think it's good for people to give thought, and the Times says this morning that I have made a decision and that they are sending up legislation and so on and so forth. I might very well make a decision, but I haven't made it yet. I'm not ready to make it, and I'm trying to look at some of these other involvements and a lot of people that we kind of have to touch base with. I met with a lot of business people and last few days, and I met with 150 every head of every labor union in the country last night. While I didn't go into any specific thing, I got a general feel that a fella kind of has to get before he sticks his neck
where. What I think I'd do if I were you, Mr. President, would be to say that they can have the benefit of the order that they've already got placed, and that they can have investment credit and accelerated depreciation on new things that you have some need of, but as far as just tearing down a perfectly good plant.
When you do that,
you're not going to give them a certificate for that kind of thing, and they don't get the accelerated depreciation if they do it. There's no penalty. You can't force them not to do it, but if they do it, there's no point in giving them a big reward for it.
They tell me, though, if you go to making one exception, they'll harass you to death, and you'll just have everybody. You just ought to suspend it. If you're going to do it at all, they say it don't amount to a damn thing in revenue the rest of this year. If we got it effective August 31st or immediately, it wouldn't amount to anything from revenue standpoint in that total picture of $115 billion. It's inconsequential. Psychological and getting them quit placing orders and stuff like that, it could be rather helpful. But if you go to saying, well, I'll exempt this because we don't need you doing, and the fella's got a tractor, he'd want it exempt because he's short of wheat, and everybody would be exempt, and then the hell of it, it would be worse than what you got. So I think we do it, we ought to just do it on a cut-off date and say, now we'll look at it in 12 months. Next 12 months, we're not going to have it.
Let me tell you what an executive of Gulf Oil Company told me, and this to me makes sense. He said that as far as they're concerned, that they figured this would cost them about $13 million a year if we did this. And he said that they think that maybe they'd prefer a tax increase. Well, you check their situation with their percentage depletion, their intangibles, and their foreign tax credit, and this would cost them more than a substantial tax increase on rates. But then he quite freely conceded to me that as a practical matter, if you leave this thing here, they're going to go ahead and build these plants and build these refineries because, from their point of view, they've got to do it in order to get the tax credit. And so, if you take the other approach, that they would, where they've got to do it, they're going to go ahead and build refineries anyway. He said, hell, we were building refineries long before we heard of any tax credit deal.
Sure.
And if they need the product and have to have the refineries to run the oil, they're going to do it anyhow. But with that on the statute books, they've got to build these big refineries, even though in some instances they're just tearing down good ones to build a bigger one and a more modern one in its place.
When are you going to bring your investor bill out of committee?
Well, we're just kind of holding on to it right now, Mr. President, because we're afraid if we let that one go, we might not get another train in the station. So,
you would want to put it on in the committee then instead of on the floor?
Well, we could do it either way, Mr. President, but I should think it'd make better sense to vote in the committee. Now, I'm not planning to try to put that on there unless until the President of the United States says
it's
a good idea.
I understand that. I understand that.
But I've got myself in position now that I won't look like a complete turncoat. Having said previously, I didn't think we ought to have a tax increase if I then proceed to say it all for the amendment. That's why I've been making some speeches saying it ought to be done.
You think Welber may be jealous of Senate adding it instead of not coming to the House committee?
He talks that way a little bit, but who in the devil really wants to claim credit for a tax increase anyhow? I never knew anybody got any vote to speak up by increasing somebody's tax, did you?
No, but he may. Through the years, he's pretty much wanted that constitutional originate in the House stuff, you know.
But Wilbur's always been willing to talk to us. I've never had occasion on a major matter that he wouldn't talk to us.
Why don't you go over there, Dan, and just talk to him without showing me or anything, and don't even tell Powell or anybody that you talk to him. But just say, now listen, Wilbur, I just want to ask you this. I don't want to take anything away from you. I don't think you want to take the credit for cooling off this investment credit. Just confine it to investment credit, though. That's all we do. And I've got this bill, and if I call my committee together, and if we voted overwhelmingly to put it in the bill, and we asked the president for his opinion, and he agreed that we'd go in the bill, the administration would support it. And I got even some Republican support, and I passed it. Is there any way in the world that you could let out an indication that you kind of favored the quickest way possible and that you would accept it? Now, if you don't want to do that, I don't want to be messing with it. I don't want to have a fight with you. I got to work with you for 20 years. You and I are going to be the boss of each committee. How would you feel about it? Let's see whether there's any possibility there or not.
Mr. President, I can tell you the answer right now. There's two answers, depending upon what you do. And I'm positive I'm right about this. This is what I think, anyway. If I'm not right about this, that's been long just that poor judgment. What I think is this. If I ask him that, he's going to say, don't do it. Some of our boys would object over here. My judgment is if I go ahead and do it, he'll go to conference with us and take it. And that's what I think.
How much do we have to have this investor's bill if he didn't take it?
Oh, you don't have to have that bill at all, really. That bill is very much exaggerated. Of course, it's one of Henry Fowler's babies, and he loves it.
This thing you all did yesterday really murdered us on NATO. I won't give you the views. I don't want to change your view because I know how you felt since you were born about this thing. But this playing president up there with these statements out of my knowing, it really gets me in a hell of a shape. And let me tell you the facts. I hadn't finished analyzing Fulbright's program in Thailand and Mansfield's suggestions on De Gaulle as commander-in-chief until this damn thing hit me in the face. And nobody had ever even mentioned it to me. You've got to call me and let me know sometime if they're getting ready to be commander-in-chief for an hour or so. Here's what we've done now. I had just had a war with the British for 2 weeks now, asking them, please don't open your mouth until you can sit down and talk to us, because they have got to make reductions with their problems there. But I want to fit them in to where we make reductions when they do, and that we take into account what the French are doing, and that we satisfy the Germans, that we're just not pulling out completely so they don't either start a complete rearmament or blow up, and that poor devil that's supporting us, and it's buying enough here to permit me to keep my people there. He's down in the polls now to 30%. Because he's just having every Bobby Kennedy in the world after him over there. They're just chewing him to pieces and saying that he's a satellite of Lyndon Johnson's and he's giving these Dutchmen's money over here and that they don't need to do it and so on and so forth. And I've said to him, now you come over here and don't you do anything. You've got to keep your commitment to me to reimburse me for every dime I spend. Now, all at that time, I had Rusk notify the Russians that would you be interested in reducing some of your 22 divisions if we would make a corresponding reduction in NATO? And they came back with a little indication, no commitment, emphasized, no commitment. But we got a response. We got a little feeler that we thought was good. So we set up to send a special mission to see the British and to try to have John McCloy, he's out of town, but he was commissioner in Germany, and he has the confidence of all the German factions, and he's on a vacation in Canada. So I sent a special messenger to him to get him to talk to the Germans, try to get him back from vacation. Preparatory to Rusk saying to Gromyko when he comes to the United Nations that if you consider removing some of your 22 divisions, we'll consider removing some of ours. And by God, right in the middle of it, so far as I can see, without doing a bit of good to anybody, we got every Democratic leader in the Senate, all 13 of them, to serve notice on the president. By God, that they ought to reduce. Now, I'm just an old Johnson City boy, but when I'm playing bridge and I show the other fellow my whole hand, I can't make a very good deal with him. And I wish that on these international things that have such terrible consequences, where you're committing me to meet with De Gaulle and puts me in a hell of an embarrassing position. I know you can't do anything about it. I'm just illustrating to you, though, my position. And where we're using Thailand bases, or if we don't, we're going to have to send them from Okinawa or Guam or something. And they're exposing those with the committee wanting to have hearings there. And John Stennis is running a sideshow over there saying the world is goddamn weak, we can't do anything. And making them all think that if they just hold out a little longer, these goddamn vultures will eat me up here in this country and won't let me stand. He's got Rusk on television. And then by God, the fourth thing for the policy committee to hit me. I don't know what kind of organization we got in that party. I don't know how we can ever get anybody elected. Do you see my point?
Well, now, Mr. President, let me just talk for 20 seconds. These boys had Rusk up here, they had McNamara up here, they had McGee up here, and they talked to him at great length. And frankly, those fellows just made a pitiful case. Now, we boys down here have no business calling the president before our policy committee to cross-examine him. If you want to talk to us, well, of course, just any time you want to send for us, we'll come down there. But
I never heard of this the first time. First time I ever heard of the Democratic Policy Committee, by God, getting into being Commander-in-Chief. I thought it was a scheduling committee, and I never looked upon it. I served on it a long time. Mansfield wrote me this letter. I get these proposals from him. I wished he could be Secretary of State for a while. But I've read 800 suggestions, and I've never found eight of them worth it. Very much, but I read them and I study them and I look at them every damn day. I've had three this week. I've got Thailand on the cooker with Fulbright. I've got De Gaulle, big meeting. I wished he'd let me run my own schedule. But then I've got this one here. But the moment I got his letter, I immediately picked up the phone, called Rusk and McNamara. I got him in. I said, now Mansfield is playing Secretary of State. Will y'all get up there right quick? Now will you tell him that two or three things. First, this is desperately unwise. So let's just let him know it's unwise. It doesn't contribute a thing to the United States. It's almost a shot in the back of some goddamn boy because it divides us. That's the first thing. It's unwise. The second thing is that whatever we do, we've got to do collectively. We want to talk to these other people. And we got to let them know if they pull out, we're going to pull out.